Good morning. Go ahead and open up your Bibles to Ephesians chapter 1. We're going to be taking our study from Ephesians 1 verses 5 through 6 as we are continuing our study of your new identity in Christ from the book of Ephesians, finding our identity not in the things of this world, but in the eternal spiritual blessings that God gives us. Millions of orphans wait every single day for parents. For parents to come and love them, to choose them, and to take them home. We cannot fully put ourselves in their situation, but I want you to try to do that for just a moment. Consider what that would be like to wait like that. To wait into the future for parents to love you, for parents to take you home. Day by day, you're passed over. Day by day, other children go home while you continue to wait. I believe this situation would cause anybody to feel sad, to feel unloved, to feel as if they do not have a future. The future feels very bleak. There is not real hope. There is not real destiny. Orphans really experience this type of feeling and hopelessness about the future and lack of feeling as if they belong, really in the deepest ways. Feeling unloved and hopeless about the future is common about others as well. Circumstances in our lives, though not at all as extreme, can cause us to feel unloved, displaced, and as if we do not belong. Circumstances and relationships in our lives can cause us to feel hopeless about the future and as if we do not have real destiny in our lives. And this is handled in various ways. We make ourselves oftentimes crazy busy in our lives so that we really don't even have time to think about the future. And whenever the busyness ends, then we feel even more empty than before. And so we try to ensure that we are never not busy. Everything must be scheduled in our lives. There's not time to pause and to think about how we do not feel as though we have purpose and a future to look forward to. But when all that busyness ends, we're still disappointed by our circumstances, and we're still disappointed by our relationships. Unmet expectations still haunt us. Many will turn to seemingly harmless activities after this, binging on certain things of this world, binging on food, binging on Netflix, binging on social media, binging on shopping and other things to try to comfort them. But these still leave us without the love, without the hope, the sense of purpose, future, and destiny that we all really crave. And unfortunately, many will seek to comfort themselves and numb this pain through pornography, painkillers, and alcohol. And others will simply take their lives because of the emptiness of the future and how overwhelming it seems to them. But was this hopelessness God's plan for us when He created us? Did God plan for us to have and feel in our hearts this emptiness and no real purpose and outlook into the future, no real destiny? Certainly not. God did not create us to fill our hearts with empty temporary things in order to feel comfortable about the future, in order to not think about the future so that we will not have pain as we consider it. We were not created to be disconnected from hope and destiny in the first place. But let me suggest to you that we are so disconnected from the concept that there could be actual hope and destiny in our lives that when I say the word destiny, it rings in our ears and we think, what are we talking about this morning? Some type of fairy tale? It sounds very childish and immature. But God did create us to have this hope. God did create us to have hope and destiny in our hearts. He did not create us to have an empty outlook on the future. Paul has been praising God in Ephesians 1 for blessing us with every spiritual blessing in the heavenly places. But in Ephesians chapter 1, verses 5 through 6, Paul describes the next spiritual blessing, which actually gives and describes the destiny God created mankind to hold on to and the goal for which God created mankind at all. Notice this destiny and goal in verses 5 and 6 of chapter 1. He predestined us for adoption as sons through Jesus Christ, according to the purpose of His will, to the praise of His glorious grace, with which He has blessed us in the beloved. Paul says in verse 5 that God predestined us. To predestine simply means to determine beforehand. And in this situation, it is our destiny and future that is being determined beforehand. Last week, we saw in verse 4 that God chose us. We did not first choose God. God chose us. God did not choose us because we were holy, because He actually chose us before the world was created. And in fact, we were dead in our sins anyway, when He ended up bringing us into a relationship with Him. And furthermore, even though we were not chosen because we were holy and blameless, we were chosen so that we would be holy and blameless. And so when we talked about being chosen last week, that really referred to who chose us, when we were chosen, and what we were chosen to be. But even though the concepts of being chosen before the foundation of the world and predestination are related, sometimes they're merged together into one concept. And as we study this, I hope we'll see that they're not truly just the same concept. Being chosen, as I've just said, refers to who chose us, when we were chosen, and what we were chosen to be. But as we come to being predestined, that is not the question that we should ask as we approach this text. Because you notice that's not is what is dealt with in this passage. That's not what is dealt with in verses 5 and 6. Rather, the question and the focus of this text is not how did God predestine us or when did God predestine us, but what did God predestine us for? What is our destiny and why did He give us this destiny? We go back to verse 5 and you notice He predestined us for adoption as sons. If we are coming here today satisfied by the world, satisfied in our lives, not necessarily by Jesus, but just satisfied in general, I want to suggest that the word adoption is going to sound very nebulous to us. It's not going to have a real impact on us. But for those who are needy, for those who are hungry and spiritually poor and know it, the word adoption sparks so much hope. This is because belonging to parents, belonging to a father and mother is important. Parents cause us to feel so much love. Nobody knows this more than one who has been an orphan. Nobody knows how significant it is to have parents than an orphan. They cause us to feel loved, but let me suggest that it's even more than love. Parents cause us to feel secure about the future. Parents cause us to feel as if we are not scared. They cause us to feel protected. For example, I am not scared, though there is some nervousness. I am not scared to move from West Palm Beach, Florida to Houston, Texas, 1,000 miles away, because if it doesn't work out, in the end, I've got mom and dad. I've got parents. We're not afraid to take risks. We're not afraid to go places. We're not afraid in the big troubles of life, or at least we're not as afraid as we would be without parents. When we have parents, it causes us to feel not only loved, but secure. Therefore, when Paul very simply says that the Father predestined us for adoption as sons, Paul was painting a very powerful picture in just those few simple words. But our question this morning then is, how is being predestined for adoption as sons by the Father a powerful spiritual image. It is certainly a powerful image in the physical world today, but how is it a powerful spiritual image? And so this morning what we're going to do for most of our time is we're going to consider four reasons why predestination for adoption is a powerful spiritual image biblically, so that this blessing can become tangible and real for us today to the praise of God's glorious grace. The first thing that is important to consider about adoption, and the first reason why predestination for adoption as sons by the Father is a powerful spiritual image, is the fact that you must be chosen to be adopted. It's kind of sad to think about the fact that it hardly matters if a child wants to be adopted. Many children want to be adopted, and the important thing is actually whether or not parents are willing to adopt and choose you, choose to adopt you as a child if you are an orphan. Furthermore, as we relate this to our spiritual lives, notice chapter 2 of Ephesians and verses 1 through 3, and consider how there is a problem for us as we consider the need to be chosen in order to be adopted. And you were dead in the trespasses and sins in which you once walked, following the course of this world, following the prince of the power of the air, the spirit that is now at work in the sons of disobedience, among whom we all once lived in the passions of our flesh, carrying out the desires of the body and the mind, and were by nature children of wrath like the rest of mankind. The problem with us being chosen by the Father to be adopted is that there is nothing spiritually desirable in us. I hate thinking about how actual children in these situations where they're waiting for parents can start to feel like this, can start to feel as though there is nothing desirable in them, and that's why they're not being chosen. I hate that because it's not the case. But for us, if it were true for anyone, it would be true for us. Because spiritually, there is nothing desirable in us. We were dead. We were the troublemakers. We're not the cute kids that parents are trying to adopt. We were the sons of disobedience, the children of wrath. Therefore, when we go back to verse 4, what we studied last week, this makes the concept of God choosing us, He chose us in Him before the foundation of the world, even more powerful. We were children of wrath and did not want God, but God stayed the course because He had chosen us. We have rejected God as our Father in the past. And even now that we have accepted God as our Father, we are still tempted from time to time to go back and follow our previous father, the prince of the power of the air, Satan. But God determined beforehand that He wanted you, a child of disobedience. Take great comfort in that. He did not just choose you in some vague way. No, now that we learn in verse 5 that when He chose us before the foundation of the world, what He was choosing us towards is the predestination for adoption. Even though we were sons of disobedience, or children of disobedience, sons of wrath, even though we were children of disobedience, even though we were children of wrath, God chose us and He wanted us and still wants us to belong to Him and to be His child. God chose you to be His child. The Father wants you. Second consideration for why predestination to adoption is a powerful spiritual image is the fact that not only must adopters choose you so that you may be adopted, they must also be willing to go through the difficulty and expense of adoption. Adoption is not something cheap. It is very expensive. It costs tens of thousands of dollars. recent adoption I'm aware of from the Ukraine, the total expenses came up over $30,000. There, on top of the expenses, though, is the difficulty of adoption. It's difficult for it to actually go all the way through and take place. There's tons of paperwork. There's background checks. There's legal proceedings. There's long waiting periods. It's difficult and expensive. Roman adoption, which these Ephesians would have been familiar with, was also an expensive process, but it was a little bit different. To adopt a child, a man would have to buy that child for the price of a slave three times, giving that payment to the child's previous father. Only on the second payment was the child free to leave his previous father, and only on the third payment did the child actually belong to the new father. The cost was significant, especially when you consider today how it is not the super rich and wealthy that are constantly adopting people. It's people who are in hard situations. It is a significant thing for us to think about, for people to think about adopting. It's a great sacrifice. We're going to consider this more in 2 weeks, but you go down and notice verse 7, that God was willing to pay this significant cost to set us free from bondage and to become his adoptive children. He says there in verse 5, in him we have redemption through his blood, the forgiveness of our trespasses. Ashley and I hope to adopt in the future. It's something that we look forward to, something we want to do. But probably because of my small capacity to love as I ought to and as God does, I do not think that I could actually look forward to adopting a child if I knew ahead of time that the child would not only be very consistently rebellious, but also that the child would especially bring harm to the other children I already have. No child of mine harms any other child of mine. But that is not the case with God. God was willing to adopt us, and it took a great price to do that. He redeemed us through the blood of his own son. He allowed the children that he was adopting to harm his own son, that we might be adopted into a relationship with God. If this were not powerful enough, notice the rest of verse 5. He predestined us for adoption as sons through Jesus Christ according to the purpose of his will. Or as some translations, or most translations actually, except for the ESV, will say, as something to the effect of the pleasure of his will. This was something that brought God great pleasure to do. God was willing to do this according to his purpose and the good pleasure of his will. There was no hand forcing God to pay this great price to adopt us. He was willing to do this. What great love the Father has shown to us. What great love it must be that the Father has for us if it was his great pleasure to adopt us at a great cost. So we've seen that adoption, predestination to adoption, is a powerful image because it meant that God chose us. And it also that it meant that God was willing to adopt us at great cost and difficulty. But third, another reason why this is a powerful spiritual image is because once you're adopted, you receive all the privileges of the children. You receive all the privileges of being a child, and there is no distinction between the other children. Once a parent adopts a child into their family, it's not like the parents actually begin to make distinctions between the children that were already there in the family and the new adopted child. Well, that new child is not going to get the benefits that the rest of the children are getting. You're not going to be able to get food tonight. You're not going to be able to go to college or have a car or have education. No, there's not these distinctions that are made. All receive the same love, the same discipline, the same blessings, and the same inheritance of the parents without favoritism. Even in the rule of Roman emperors, this rule of Roman emperors was passed down often to adoptive children. This is the beauty of adoption. Once you are in, you are in. It's like you are always there. You are a natural child at that point, a natural born child at that point. This is great when we compare what we deserve with the blessings of being this child of God. Notice verse 11, something we will consider in even few more weeks. In him we have obtained an inheritance, having been predestined according to the purpose of him who works all things according to the counsel of his will. We actually, even though we are adopted, have an inheritance waiting for us from the Father. Consider how another privilege of being in God's family, being God's child, is receiving actual family. Not only do we have God as our Father, but we can all call one another here brothers and sisters as a family because we call God our Father. And isn't this a pretty marvelous family here? It is. But even further, what is most beautiful about this, about the concept that we, once we are adopted, receive all the benefits of being God's child, we receive Christ as our brother. Romans chapter 8 and verse 29 says, "For those whom he foreknew, he also predestined to be conformed to the image of his Son, in order that he might be the firstborn among many brothers." It was God's plan that we would be brothers with Jesus, that we would look like Jesus. And what's most powerful about this, though, is how Christ himself embraces us as his brothers. This is something Jason read in the Lord's Supper talk in Hebrews chapter 2 and verses 10 through 11. "For it was fitting that he, for whom and by whom all things exist, in bringing many sons to glory, should make the founder of their salvation perfect through suffering. For he who sanctifies and those who are sanctified all have one source. That is why he is not ashamed to call them brothers." We are not worthy to be called God's children. We are not worthy to be called Jesus' brothers. We are not worthy of Jesus' suffering that made this adoption possible. Yet you notice here that as Jesus considers us, he is not ashamed to call us his brothers. This is significant because this is not a common thing among family. This is not a common thing even among brothers. When I was younger and I would look at my younger brothers, I would say, oh, you know my brother? Oh, well, I'm not like him. Don't worry. I don't know him. We're different. Because of my immaturity, I guess. But we all have family, if we think about it for a moment. We all have family that we could be ashamed of because of their actions in their life. And Jesus should be ashamed of us. But consider, Jesus is not. Not before God's throne. Not when insults are thrown at us by Satan. We have a brother before God's throne who accepts us. We have a brother before God's throne who God saw fit to make perfect through suffering, so that he would be able to be a merciful high priest. He knows us. He can relate to us. He's not ashamed to call us brothers. And so let us take great, great comfort then, Christians. Not only has God adopted us, meaning that he has chosen us and been willing to pay a great sacrifice, but he has also adopted us in the fact that we are now his natural children, and we receive all the benefits and rights of that. But why does all this matter? Why does this, all these blessings of being adopted matter? They matter for a fourth reason. Predestination for adoption matters because it provides a real destiny to hope in the midst of insecure times. Consider the situation of these first century Christians in Ephesus. First, we learn in chapter 3, verse 1, of Ephesians. For this reason, I, Paul, a prisoner for Christ Jesus on behalf of you Gentiles. We learn that Paul is in prison as he writes this letter. Furthermore, if you're familiar with Acts chapter 19, you know that, what happened whenever Paul taught the gospel in Ephesus? A riot broke out. A riot broke out because people were so angry about the gospel being preached there because it was ruining their idolatry business. These two things are simply signs to remind us of the fact that it was painful to be a Christian. It reminds us of the fact that the pain Jesus promised would come to Christians was very present. Consider portions of Matthew chapter 10, specifically verses 21 through 22, 36, and 39. Brother will deliver brother over to death, and the father his child. And children will rise against parents and have them put to death. And you will be hated by all for my name's sake. And a person's enemies will be those of his own household. Whoever finds his life will lose it, and whoever loses his life for my sake will find it. Times were bad for Christians. Many were not wanted by their families. Many would be afflicted. If you look at the Christian life physically from an external standpoint, it was filled with darkness. It was filled with insecurity and fear. But this is not the tone of Paul in this letter. Paul writes from the darkest place, prison, and he is praising God because all saints have security. They have a destiny to be adopted by the Father. And that destiny is written in stone. They are predestined. This has been predetermined. No matter what may come into the future, they have that to hope in. This reminds us then that while we are considered God's children now, there is actually a future destiny aspect to our adoption that has not yet taken place. Consider Romans chapter 8, verses 22 through 25, which points to this not-yetness of our adoption. For we know that the whole creation has been groaning together in the pains of childbirth until now. And not only the whole creation, or not only the creation, but we ourselves, who have the first fruits of the Spirit, groan inwardly as we wait eagerly for adoption as sons, the redemption of our bodies. For in this hope we were saved. Now hope that is not, or that is seen, is not hope. For who hopes for what he sees? But if we hope for what we do not see, we wait for it with patience. Many passages teach us that we are God's children. But what is unique here about Romans 8 is how it points to the not-yetness of our adoption. Paul says, we who have the first fruits of the Spirit, who only have this right now, are groaning inwardly. Why? Because we are eagerly waiting our adoption as sons. Paul says this is the hope that we were saved in. And if we were saved with this hope, then it's significant to know that this hope is not yet here. It's not yet fully come because we don't hope for something that we see before us. We hope for something that we do not see because we hope that it will come. We're waiting for it patiently. And so Romans 8 actually says this is something we're looking forward to. It's a destiny that we're looking out to. Even Ephesians 1:5 points to this because Paul says here that God predestined us for adoption. Our adoption is a predetermined destiny, not a current reality. Having this hope to hold on to matters because the Christian life is not an easy path. It can be a path of discouragement at times. It can be a path with difficult decisions where we're denying ourselves in this life. Jesus calls his followers to forsake every possession and person. He calls his followers to stop seeking life here and to die to themselves, to take up their cross and follow Jesus. Many move from family. Many change careers. Many lose friends. Many lose family. Many sell all for Jesus. And the fact that we are predestined for adoption by the Father matters, because if we put our hope in the right place, brothers and sisters, then we can sell all and sacrifice anything and lose anything for the sake of Jesus confidently and joyfully, because we have destiny. We have hope. We have something greater to look forward to. This is the hope we were created to put all of our stock in, when life seems empty and when the future looks bleak. The world never delivers on their promises, but we know, and our faith is based on the fact that the Father does deliver on his promises. And so we are not hopeless. We have a real destiny. One day we will see the Father face to face. One day we will be in the place where he is our light, and where there are no more tears, there are no more sorrows, no more death, no more sickness, no more temptations to sin, because we will be with the Father and we will fully receive adoption as sons and be with him in that day. And as we look forward to that, we can come through any difficulty in our lives. Consider why God gives us this great destiny and hope in verse 6. He did this to the praise of his glorious grace, with which he has blessed us in the beloved. Adoption as sons is not even God's end game. Adoption as sons is beautiful, but the praise of God's glorious grace is the end for which God has adopted us. And this really makes sense, because when parents go through the difficulty and expense of adopting a child, we do not turn and praise the child for their worthiness of adoption. What do? We turn and we see that the parents are great, that they are loving, that they were willing to do this. Even if joyfully, it was a sacrifice, and so they are great because of it. In the same way, God is glorified by our adoption. He is displaying his goodness. God is not good in the world's eyes, as we have been discussing in this series. But we can find purpose and identity in the fact that God is displaying his goodness to the world. God is displaying his goodness to all spiritual beings and all physical beings by giving you a future to hope in, by promising you and giving you the preordained destiny that one day you will be his child and you will be with him. We will be able to call him Father in an even more close way and real way. And so let us seek God's purpose by giving him all praise and glory as we find hope that lasts in the midst of a world that will not last. But we can only glorify God if we actively hope in the destiny that God has predetermined for us. And so let's wrap this up in a compact way. I want to encourage you to take a new outlook on life's discouraging and bleak days. The next time life does not meet our expectations, let us remember that this life is not where our destiny lies. The things in this world that we are told to hope in are not our true eternal hope, and they are not our destiny. This world is not meant to fulfill our dreams. We have a story to hold on to and a destiny to grab a hold of that is not yet finished. And so it does not matter in the bleak days and difficult days. It does not matter what is against us. When we lose our jobs, when people disappoint us, or when we face illness, face sin, face persecution, face loneliness, let us pause. And let's make a decision. When we pause We can either decide to continue to binge on constant busyness and binge on earthly pleasures, or we can pause and realize that that is empty, and we can patiently meditate on and hope in the reality that our stories are not finished because God has preordained our destiny. And when we have that great hope, it will motivate us to purity, to looking like Jesus, our brother, to looking like God in his character. This is exactly what is taught to us in 1 John chapter 3 and verses 1 through 3. See what kind of love the Father has given us to us, that we should be called children of God. And so we are. The reason why the world does not know us is that it did not know him. Beloved, we are God's children now, and what we will be has not yet appeared. But we know that when he appears, we shall be like him, because we shall see him as he is. And everyone who thus hopes in him purifies himself as he is pure. Hope in the midst of difficulty. Hope in your eternal destiny. And that will motivate you towards a purity that will last. And when this life is over, you will be able to confidently look forward and realize that this does not mean that our story is over. It simply means that the never-ending good part is just about to begin. Hope in the destiny of adoption that God has preordained for you, and give God the glory.